Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. What happens when a major employer in a small Midwestern town shuts down its plant, a source of generational employment, culture? We look at a city in transition and a microcosm of the alienation of the middle class, ultimately resulting in the election of Trump. It's an American story tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Amy Goldstein, Pulitzer Prize-winning staff writer at the Washington Post for over 30 years, where she focuses on social policy. Been a fellow at the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard. And the book is Janesville, an American Story. Welcome from the office of the Washington Post, Amy.
Good to be with you.
All right. Tell us, starting off, why you picked Janesville, what you set out to do, and as a point of interest, it happens to be Speaker Paul Ryan's district.
That's right. It is Speaker Ryan's district. Well, I began thinking about taking a really close-up look at what happens when work goes away as the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009 was ending. I was struck that there was a lot of good writing being done around that time about many aspects of the recession, whether then-President knew Obama's economic policies were working or not and the political fighting over that, whether the bailout of the auto industry was the right thing to have done, what was happening with the banks and whether they should have gotten federal help. But what I noticed was that there was not a lot of attention being given by writers in what it was really like for people to lose work. And that was a story that I wanted to tell. What happens to people and what happens to the texture of a proud community when work that people have been relying on for generations suddenly disappeared?
It's really a tremendous effort. It hits you right in the gut and you get a sense of all the unemployment, to opiate addiction, to declining health, to the sense of shame, all the things that have affected the middle class. I'll start off by explaining Janesville and how General Motors came to almost be the center of the culture in the town for generations.
Well, Janesville is a town of about 63,000-64,000 people, and it has a very proud industrial history. Before General Motors arrived, which it did just after World War I, so that was a long time ago, even earlier, the Parker Pen Company was founded in Janesville by a local guy who was teaching at a telegraphy school and was fixing leaky fountain pens and came up with a better kind of pen, and that became the Big Parker Pen Company, that by the beginning of the 20th century already had international markets. So that company began more than a century ago to give Janesville, the small Midwestern city, an outsized sense of its reach into the world. And then just after World War I, a man who was the head of a farm implements manufacturing company in Janesville persuaded the then president of General Motors to begin making tractors in Janesville. And that began in 1919, and in 1923, the General Motors plant in Janesville began to make Chevrolets. So if you think about how many generations of workers that's been in these two kind of iconic industries in town, that's a lot of jobs and a lot of people who saw this industrial identity, as you say, as central to Janesville's culture. By the time the General Motors plant closed, which was just 2 days before Christmas of 2008, right in the midst of the Great Recession,
wow.
There were about 3,000 workers at the plant. In its heyday in the 1970s, there had been 7,100 workers at that plant. So that's a lot of people in a small city, and it was not only the GM workers that were making, you know, good salaries, good pay. At the end, they were making $28 an hour. That's good pay for industry work. This assembly plant spawned over the decades all kinds of supplier companies that were there because General Motors were there. So there was a company that employed people to drive finished vehicles out of the plant. There was a factory that itself had 800 people that were making seats for the plant. So not only when General Motors closed did a few thousand GM workers disappear, no longer had jobs, but thousands of other workers lost their jobs because the assembly plant was no longer there.
And you mentioned 7,000 employees at the peak. The scale is just amazing. I think if I have this right, it was almost 5 million square feet, which is like 10 football fields. And even the radio news, the talking radio, was synchronized to the shift changes. And I guess generations worked there, father, son, et cetera.
That's right. So these are some of the details that I found very compelling when I was learning about the community, that, not only did the radio news coincide with the shift changes, but grocery prices went up when people got General Motors raises. When the plant was going, there were rail lines into the factory. So there were a lot of goods coming and going. And people understood that there were lots of trains going through town, through the town, and they timed their trips across town to avoid those trains. And, I remember people telling me that when the plant shut down, suddenly Janesville seemed quiet. There weren't the big traffic jams at shift change times. Those trains weren't coming along. So just the whole feel of the community suddenly changed.
Well, the politicians up, it's Paul Ryan's district. Did the people there, and from what you've seen, get a sense that the politicians and then Ryan got it? He's sort of in Washington looking at, cutting the safety net, et cetera. And then in the real world, there's a whole lot of suffering going on. Was there a disconnect there, and does that end up linking to why someone like Trump would get elected?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about the political feel in Janesville. It's a big United Auto Workers town, or at least it was when all these union jobs existed. So you had a very conservative congressman who was elected when he was 28 years old, representing a district that at its heart was a pretty Democratic-leaning place. Now, other parts of the district, a little bit farther to the north, have been configured so that they're more Republicans in parts of the district. So it's a pretty safe seat, or at least always has been for Paul Ryan. But there's always been a little bit of a disconnect between his actual hometown of Janesville and his own political outlook. That said, at first when the news came that the plant was going to close, and at the beginning, the announcement that the plant was closing came in June of 2008. Mm-hmm. And General Motors at first said it would close the plant sometime within the following 2 years. Well, that ended up closing much sooner than that, within several months. But at the time, people in Wisconsin, the state leadership and the leadership of the community and the United Auto Workers Local 95, they all thought that they could prevail upon General Motors not to close it, either to keep it open or to close it temporarily and give Janesville's plant a new product to make. I mean, that had happened over the decades. Products came and products went. So a number of the political leaders from that part of Wisconsin, as well as the then Democratic governor named Doyle, all worked together in a very bipartisan way at the beginning to try to put together a good both economic incentive package and good arguments for why General Motors should keep that plant alive. And Paul Ryan was at the beginning very much part of that effort. He knew the top leadership of General Motors personally better than anybody else in the congressional delegation from Wisconsin, because they had been interested in some things that, you know, he was working on in Congress. So they had a working relationship. So my story starts, the story of the book that I tell starts, in fact, with Paul Ryan standing in his kitchen at home one night and getting a phone call from the head of General Motors at the time, somebody who would himself be deposed within the next year. But he called Paul Ryan to give him a heads up that the next day there was going to be a plant closing announcement. So Paul Ryan was very central to what happened and really was, you know, even though he was not somebody who believed in, you know, earmarks for politicians to bring home, you know, financial favors to their communities, and he's not been a big fan of, as you say, you know, entitlement programs for low-income people. He was very involved for quite a while in trying to save the plant. It just didn't work.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell of the Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country, and as goes GM, so goes Janesville, and GM, in fact, filed for bankruptcy right around then, so which may have explained why things were moved up. Next, we're going to dive a little deeper when we get back from the break, and we're going to meet some of the people of Janesville.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
My name is Bobby. I'm a veteran and lost my leg to a roadside bomb. My victory was going from a wheelchair to becoming a weightlifting champion.
I'm Sam. I'm a veteran. My victory was finding a career that I could be proud of.
At DAV, we're on a mission, helping veterans of all generations get the benefits they've earned.
I'm Cece. My victory was finishing my education.
When America's veterans win, we all win. Help us support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still still at historic lows. You can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Greece is cheap.
But the airfare costs a fortune.
Paris?
Not much closer, and again, airfare...
What about Puerto Vallarta?
Let's face it, flying anywhere is just too expensive.
Wait, what's this? Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. Where would you like to go? London, Rome, Costa Rica, Australia?
Wow, that's cheap.
So why wait? Call now to learn how crazy cheap it is to fly anywhere in the U.S. or international. Our prices are so low, we can't publish them. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Washington Post staff writer Amy Goldstein, expert on social policy. And we're going to dive now into Janesville. She spent a whole bunch of time in there meeting the folks. And there's a bunch of stories that run parallel with each other. We're going to look at some of them. And I want to start off with to give folks the generational sense, the seniority, how the place. And it's Marb Wopat, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it, and his son. They're generational. Talk a little bit about that from that perspective.
My idea and how I wanted to tell the story was to make it feel like a kaleidoscope. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing events unfold from the vantage points of three main families of workers and then other people in town who were each from their own perspectives trying to figure out how to help the community cope with this huge loss of jobs. And the Wopat family is one of those three main families of auto workers. Marv Wopat retired from General Motors after 40 years there the summer of 2008. And just a few weeks later, his son, Matt, lost his job at the same auto plant. And Matt was in his late 30s. He had worked at the plant for 13 years, is married, had three daughters. And he needed to figure out what to do next. And like a lot of people in town, Marv Wopat, his dad, really believed that it was just a matter of time before this plant reopened. I mean, there was a lot of denial in Janesville about the possibility that this time might be different and the plant wouldn't get a new product. So Marv was telling his son Matt that just hang on, the GM workers themselves, unlike people who worked at the supplier company, were getting pretty good what was called subpay, which is supplemental union benefits in addition to their unemployment that they could collect. So for a while, Matt was just hoping that things would straighten out. And eventually he decided that that might not be the case, and he at least needed to prepare for a plan B in case the plant didn't open, and he went back to school. And he decided to retrain to be a utility worker for the local utility company because the kind of word on the street and the advice from counselors at a local technical college in town where a lot of people were coming back to school to retrain was that there were older workers at the utility company who were ready to retire so that jobs would be opening up. So that seemed pretty appealing. So Matt went back to school, and it was hard. I mean, you could imagine that a lot of these people, men and women, were in their 30s, their 40s. They hadn't been in school half a lifetime. They were nervous about where they were going to find work, whether they could keep their house payments going, whether they could keep food on the table for dinner. And partway through this school year, Matt became very concerned that the health benefits that he'd been getting from General Motors, even after he stopped working there, kind of layoff health benefits were about to run out. And he and his wife became concerned about whether they could keep the house. And Matt and some of the other GM people with whom he was retraining went to their instructor and basically said, look, we need you to level with us. If we stick out this year and get our certificate to do this utility work, what are the odds there are going to be jobs for us? And the instructor leveled with them and said, probably not so good, because some of the older workers we thought were retiring aren't leaving because their whatever little bit of money they had saved for retirement has really dwindled in this bad economy. So Matt ended up doing something that other people in town who had worked at General Motors had done before him, and he had sworn he was never going to do. And what that was to take a transfer offer by General Motors to work at a different plant. Mm. There were already people who were commuting to Arlington, Texas, and to near Kansas City, and to places in Michigan and Ohio. And many of these people didn't move their families out of Janesville, but just were commuting, coming back, you know, every week or every month, depending on how long these distances were, to be back with their family. And around the time that Matt is going through the soul searching, a transfer offer came up to work at a plant in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is about 300 miles away. So Matt did it. He became one of the people who are called GM Gypsies. He began leaving on Monday mornings to drive this distance several hours to the Fort Wayne assembly plant, came home late on Friday night, the wee hours of Saturday morning, spent weekends at home, and would start all over again Monday morning. He began this in March of 2010. He is still doing it to this day. He's got several more years to go before he'll have 30 years in that makes GM workers eligible for a pension or retirement. And this is how he's kept his family in the middle class.
How have his kids and the wife, how's that gone in the gypsy kids and gypsy story?
Well, Matt's got a very strong family. I mean, he's got a good marriage, and he and his kids, who are now, you know, out of high school, but some of them were still in school when he began this, are pretty close. So he's managing. I mean, it's not easy. He's very determined about coming home. I mean, he even on weekends when there's a day's overtime on Saturdays, he'll come home for one day on Sunday to avoid not seeing his family that week.
Now, the another family, and I don't know if Whitaker is the right pronunciation, but you feel the shame, and as they sort of move down to, from the middle class a little bit lower, and their house goes down, and the girls have to work three jobs while they're getting good grades. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Whitaker family includes Jared Whitaker, who is exactly Matt Wopat's age and worked at the plant for almost exactly the same amount of time that Matt Wopat had. And when the layoffs came, Jared actually had never really liked working at the plant, but he liked the money. And like a lot of people, including the Wopat family, he had a father and father-in-law and you know, other relatives who've been at the plant, and just figured that if they had all been able to stick it out until they could retire, that he could too. But he was kind of relieved when the plant closed at first, and he figured he would get another job. And as I was mentioning, he was getting this layoff pay from the union contract with General Motors, and he thought things were going to go okay. And he also went back to school, but only briefly. He began in the same program that Matt did, to train to be a utility worker, but lasted just a couple weeks, because what happened was that his instructor had the people in the class divide into groups and bang a wooden practice pole into the ground and had each of them climb it. So when Jared's turn came, he climbed up this pole about 10 feet, lost his footing, and basically slid down, abrading his chest on the way down on this wooden pole, and was absolutely terrified. And it made him rethink whether he wanted to do utility work, in which he might eventually be much, much higher up in the air. And he left school. And that was the beginning of him bouncing in and out of a whole succession of jobs that didn't pay enough. If General Motors had been paying him $28 an hour, then he was making in these jobs $12, $13, $14 an hour. His wife, Tammy, was piecing together two part-time jobs, also not making much money. And they also have three children. Their daughters are twins, and when I met them, they were high school seniors. And as you mentioned, they were really good kids, getting good grades and taking AP courses, and their teachers loved them, and they were going off to college. And between them, their senior year, they were working five jobs after school and before school and on weekends. and were basically slipping their parents' bits of money to help pay bills.
All right, we're going to hear a little bit more stories and then some programs, whether they worked or not, helping the folks there as soon as we get back.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit? Doesn't matter. No credit? Doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce, it just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 11ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.11ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 11ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're talking with from the Washington Post staff writer Amy Goldstein. Her new book is Janesville, An American Story. And taking off where we ended the final segment, talk a little bit about there's this woman that started what's called the Parker Closet to help kids. Some of these kids in school had nothing left at home. Some of them were even homeless, and obviously too much shame to talk about it, and how she helped them out.
Well, as I mentioned, I wanted this story to make clear what various people in the community were trying to do to help people cope, help families cope with the loss of jobs. And Derry Whalert is a social studies teacher at one of the city's two high schools, called Parker High School, named for Parker Penn. And she started noticing that it was not just that there were kids in the school who were from families that had always been poor, but there were students who had come from formerly middle-class families who just weren't doing very well right now. And on her own, she began collecting donations, and she asked her principal whether she could have a spare room to create what she was calling the Parker Closet. And it was a place that had jeans and still does have jeans and toiletries and school supplies. And she and some of the other teachers just very quietly will tap a student on the shoulder if they think that they could use some help, and tell them that this room exists with these donated goods. And the thing that I found pretty poignant was that one of the Whitaker twins was the first of the two of them to be shown the closet. And not only was this girl, his name is Kezia Whitaker, just overwhelmed that there was this generosity in the community that was providing things, but it was the first time she really understood that if this room existed full of things for people who needed help, it might not be just her family that was suffering, because, as you mentioned, this was not something that was talked about. I mean, people who are middle-class people who are sliding out of the middle class are understandably often very proud, don't want to be looking publicly for help, and don't want to be discussing it. So the fact that this teacher found a way to let students get this help in a way that maintained their dignity, I think was the key to its success.
All right, and now kind of a tragic story. A woman named Christy Beyer had made a successful transition, right, and then things didn't work out.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the things that really interested me through all of this research and getting to know people in Janesville was what determined which people were able to take this very adverse experience of losing a job they thought would last forever, a good job, and turn themselves around and find a new direction, and which ones ultimately did not succeed at that. And Christy Beyer was a woman who had worked at a supplier to the General Motors assembly plant, the seat-making factory called Lear. And she went back to school and was an absolute standout as a student. She was training to go into criminal justice work and was getting terrific grades and really impressing both her instructors and people for whom she was doing internships in the community. And when she finished up, she got an associate degree in criminal justice from Black Hawk Technical College, a local school in Janesville that was doing all this training. And she was one of just a couple of people out of a lot of people who had applied for jobs at the local jail in town. And she started working there, and over a period of time, she just wasn't doing very well. She ended up getting involved in an affair with somebody who had recently been an inmate, and was looking at some possible punishment for that, and very, very tragically ending up taking what was a fatal overdose.
And by the way, you do a tremendous job of presenting, you know, as you said, the feelings in these families and what they were going through. It really hits you in the gut. I want to now turn a little bit to the impact of programs and stuff and the government and training, because there's some kind of surprising results. You already mentioned Black Hawk Tech, and they even focused on some IT and vocational types of things. But it did not appear that folks going through there did any better getting jobs or higher pay. Is that right? Or talk about the effectiveness of some of these programs.
Well, I was very interested in the question of, if I was going to look at all these jobs that went away, what are this country's policies for trying to get people back to work? And I was struck that one of the few economic policies on which both Democrats and Republicans tend to agree is the idea that people should go back to school, should retrain. And there's a lot of federal money that goes into retraining programs for what's called dislocated workers, people who've lost their jobs and there's no expectation those jobs are going to come back. And Janesville got a lot of this money, and there was a place in town called the Job Center, similar to places and communities all around the country that got a lot of government money to help people who lose their work figure out what to do. And the Job Center was really encouraging people to go back to school. So in addition to talking to a lot of people at the college, I did a statistical analysis with a couple of good labor economists at what happened to people in that part of southeastern Wisconsin who were laid off and did not retrain. And counterintuitively, the people who did go back to school at least a few years afterwards were less likely to be working all four seasons of the year and were more likely to have had bigger drops in pay from before the recession to afterwards. So that's a pretty sobering finding. Yeah. And I should say that that's not to say that job retraining never works, but I think that people in the community expected that, as in earlier recessions in this country, by the time people went through training programs, jobs would be coming back. And as you know, in this recession, it took much longer for jobs to start to come back again than had been true in earlier bad economic periods. And I also want to say that this college, Black Hawk Tech, I think did everything a school could do to try to be helpful to these traumatized, laid-off workers who were suddenly finding themselves students again well into middle age. They tried to figure out what these people needed, among other things. People at the college quickly realized that some of these former factory workers weren't that good at using computers. So they started computer boot camps. They started study skills sessions. So the college was really trying hard, but that doesn't mean that things always turned out well. And that's not to say that none of the people in the stories that I tell didn't benefit from having gone back to school. There are people who really succeeded, but on balance, it wasn't always a successful experience, at least not in the short term.
Now, how did you find there's community grants? There was $1 million from the Obama stimulus. The Department of Labor had Workforce Investment Act. Obama actually came to town, and so that you got hope arriving. Were these programs were they uncoordinated? But in the various parts of the government, did they have metrics that showed whether they were successful or not, or was it a little bit Blackhawkish that it didn't have the results that you might have thought would have happened with the resources being thrown in there?
Well, let me say a couple things. Obama came to town before he was President Obama. He was Senator Obama.
Yeah.
And he arrived in the winter of 2008, just before the presidential primary in Wisconsin that he was hoping to win, and he did win. And, you know, when I talked a moment ago about the denial in the community that these jobs wouldn't come back, I mean, he gave a big economic speech inside the Janesville Assembly Plant on that cold day in February 2008. And one of the things that he said really struck me. He said, the promise of Janesville is the promise of America. And he said that essentially if the country elected him president and followed the economic ideas that he was espousing, that this plant would be there for another 100 years. And, of course, the plant was closed within a year. So that's pretty powerful stuff. With respect to the job retraining money, it's not so much that the funding was disorganized. There are a couple different programs that are housed in the Department of Labor.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on where you had worked before you lost your job, you qualified for one or the other kinds of that training money. So it wasn't that people weren't getting the right money, and it wasn't that the college was not trying hard to steer people into studying to go into fields in which it seemed likely that jobs would exist by the end of their training. Just everybody guessed wrong as to how soon work would come back.
The White House had the task force or whatever, and I read in your book, I think, that the GAO and places like that evaluated whether these things all came together, and it did not give it a huge, that it was a great job done. And the people there, did they feel the government was there for them?
Well, I mean, Janesville is a very resilient and resourceful community.
Yeah, Midwestern, my folks.
And I didn't know that when I started to gain to know people in Janesville. I was just trying to absorb as much as I could and learn what was this place about and how is it trying to cope and how well was it succeeding in reattracting jobs. And so I think if you talk to people in Janesville, they'll tell you that they're still there, that the unemployment rate has gone down. What's also true, even though the unemployment rate, which had been over 13% in early 2009, is now about 4%, even though more people are working, people are not making anything like the pay they made when those good auto factory jobs existed. But people feel as if they're hanging in there.
Midwestern stock folks, I know. We're going to come back now for our final national segment. Stay with us.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill. Pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too. because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658. 800-915-9658.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guests from the Washington Post, Amy Goldstein here, our final national segment. And I don't know if it's a tale of two cities or not, but I know they've made some chances to reinvent themselves, and there's some biotech, I think, and there's some new business they brought in. Is there a layer that was related to the plant that has sort of been left behind? Have they started? Is there a two-city kind of deal? What is the plant? What's the plant now? Is it empty?
Well, the plant has been empty for years now. What's happening right now is that, well, let me tell you what's been happening within General Motors. For years, the Janesville assembly plant was in a status called standby. And that meant that absolutely nothing was happening inside the plant, but it wasn't permanently closed. It was eligible to be reopened if the market demand ever warranted it. And that was a very important status for the United Auto Workers aspirations to get these jobs back. And while the union folks really wanted this plant to be in this limbo status, people in the business community and people like Paul Ryan really thought that it was time to have the plant permanently closed so that the city could try to find a new occupant for all this property. Big piece of land sitting vacant in town. So a couple of years ago, in the most recent negotiations between the United Auto Workers and General Motors, the plant was permanently closed. And what's happening right now is that the city has been looking for a buyer. And in the last weeks, it's just named a company out of St. Louis that is interested in buying the General Motors land. It's not absolutely certain that this is going to go through. It's kind of in a period where everybody's sizing up the offer and what would be required to take over this land, clean up some environmental problems there. But it's a company that specializes in distressed industrial properties, and it's not at all clear what it would do with the General Motors buildings. There's some suggestion that if this company does go ahead and this deal happens, that the plant could actually be raised in a bit more than a year. So it could be, not saying it's definitely going to happen, but it's possible that for the first time in nearly a century, the General Motors plant won't be physically in Janesville.
And by the way, from your stats, I think there is 10,000 fewer manufacturing jobs, 50% of what was there in 1990. There have been some businesses that have moved in, right? A biotech business. Have they been able to diversify the economy to some degree?
Well, they have been trying there to diversify the community. There's been a very assertive economic development coalition run by two business leaders in the county that Janesville's in. Janesville's the county seat of Rock County, Wisconsin. So there's something called Rock County 5.0 that's been trying to recruit businesses to town and persuade the ones that are there to not leave. It's hard work. And the company that you're referring to is a startup called Shine Medical.
Yeah.
Which is out of some of the research going on scientifically in Madison, which is just up the road,
right.
About 40 miles, 40 minutes away. And this is a little company that came up with a new way of developing a medical isotope that is needed in hospitals. It's been a very slow process. Shine Medical, a few years ago, decided to pick Janesville as its manufacturing home after the city. I mean, as the state was offering a lot of money to General Motors to try to persuade that company to give the Janesville Assembly Plant a new product. The city of Janesville offered a lot of money to this little company, this little startup, Chime Medical, to persuade it to do manufacturing in Janesville. It was never going to create a lot of jobs. I mean, the head of Shine has said that perhaps this would create someday 150 jobs, so it's nothing like the many thousands of jobs that disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's not yet producing jobs, but it is producing hope in town that if it gets going, you know, might potentially, as you say, be the harbinger of a more diverse community.
In fact, I want to end on hope in the middle class. I don't normally recommend this, but you've got to read the appendix of this book. I want to mention some of these stats, and you can jump in if you want. 33% in the 10 lost a job or lived with someone who did. 75% had a decrease in their house value, which, of course, is the biggest asset. 50% of the people had trouble paying for food. 50%, more than 50%, took jobs, as you mentioned, following their layoffs for less money. The union memberships, 15% now belong to union versus almost half. 75% still feel the economy is in a recession. 50% their financial situation is worse than the recession. And those are pretty, you know.
Those are sobering statistics.
Oh,
and,
man.
And, you know, my idea in doing this survey, which I did with some folks at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, was that I wanted to make clear that even though much of the story is told through these close-ups of individuals in town,
right.
that their experience is representative of a broader truth. Even if you're in a community when thousands of people are losing exactly the same kind of work that you had, in a country that's going through the worst economic times since the Great Depression of the 1930s, that losing work is very, very personal. People take it hard and to heart.
And the book just hits you right in the gut. Okay, let's finish off on the do the folks there feel the American dream is withering away? You mentioned hope. How do you wrap it up as we close up?
Well, I don't know that people there think in the abstractions of the American dream. I think they think, how are they going to keep their families going? And how are they going to keep their communities going? And my whole idea in telling this story of what happened to our economy and to loss of good jobs to one community is to make it very tangible that it's not just big ideals that we have in the country, but it's an accumulation of experiences that individual towns and individual people go through when work goes away.
And are they alienated? This was obviously the election of Trump, but I think you said that they didn't necessarily vote for Trump.
That's correct. The town is still leaning Democratic. In 2012, the previous election, 62% of the people in Janesville County had voted for Barack Obama. This last time, a year ago, it was 52% that voted for Hillary Clinton. So it was down. But if you look at why it was down, it was that the Democratic turnout was less. It wasn't that a lot of people were flipping to the Republican Party, at least in Janesville. And what I think is that this story really illustrates the kinds of hard economic experiences that people in many communities across the country are going through, among particularly working class people, which is what these kinds of jobs in Janesville were. And in communities that are less tied to their own longstanding political traditions, in this case, union traditions and traditions of the Democratic Party, those kinds of experiences elsewhere encourage people to vote for somebody who's representing change, which is what they saw in Donald Trump.
hopefully, I hope the folks there have read your book and feel proud that how important they were watching them survive, as you say, the worst time since the Depression. A big thanks to Amy Goldstein for giving us an hour. She's in the Washington Post. And the book is Janesville, An American Story. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Thanks to Amy. Thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.